Welcome back to Channel 9 Live. My name is John Papa. I'm a cloud developer advocate here in Azure, and we're having a great time at Build. I've got some folks up here who know a little bit about a topic called Node.
Node.
Why don't we introduce each other real quick? You are?
Hi, I'm Dan Shaw, founder and chief evangelist of NodeSource.
NodeSource. Right there you go. All right.
I'm Gaurav Seth. I'm a lead PM on all things JavaScript here. So look at the Chakra engine, look at TypeScript, and Node.js on Azure.
Hold on. You work for Microsoft?
Yep.
And you work with JavaScript and Node?
Yep.
That is it. Awesome.
That is.
Are you hiring?
Job. I am.
That is awesome.
I am totally hiring. So if you're interested, hit me up.
All right. You heard it right here.
I'm Jonathan Carter. I'm a PM at Microsoft as well, working on Gaurav's team on Node.js and Azure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
My name is Joe Doyle, Solutions Architect Manager. I work with Dan at NodeSource.
That's fantastic. So here at Build, we've been talking a lot about Azure. Azure's been all the buzz, right?
Yep.
Running everything in the cloud. And the cloud runs everything, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So one of those things that runs is Node. And you guys have some stuff that runs with Node as well. Can you tell us about what NodeSource does?
Right. So at NodeSource, you know, we were created to really enable the enterprise. We came at the challenge of Node from the underserved enterprise. And it sounds odd to, you know, in such a enterprise-friendly environment here at Build to, you know, assert that, you know, Node was not enterprise-friendly. But, you know, several years ago, Node was being used by, you know, hackers and startups.
Right.
And, you know, businesses were seeing the value of using Node.js, writing end-to-end JavaScript applications and really accelerating development with that. And they needed, you know, a partner in that experience. So let me
stop there. So you're saying lots of companies, like they use Java.net, things like that.
Yep.
I said the other word, right? Java. And they use these things, but they get a lot of support. They always know they can go call companies
right.
to help them solve problems. Node kind of spawned out of another world, right?
Right, yeah.
And it slowly eked its way into the enterprise and a lot of companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're leaning on this because they can build things fast, easily, and pull an open source. But how do they manage those other parts, like operational stuff, analytics,
right.
Data tracking?
So, you know, these companies were used to, you know, 10, 15-year maturity of operational tools. And you look at Node, and Node is like, it's, you know, intentionally tiny. It's you know,
right.
this hyper-minimalist platform. And when you're taking that, deploying that with your operations team, you know, what are they looking at? How do they know, you know, Node application, tell me, are you okay? You know, that is, you know, non-trivial. So, you know, to be able to bring that and bring that whole team experience into the Node.js deployment to support modern DevOps best practices is why NodeSource, you know, entered into the ecosystem and really has been driving that, you know, this business needs, listening to the pain points and, you know, providing the solutions to make that easy and, you know, having the always-on best practices. This is by default.
So let's make this practical and have some real-world examples here. Let's say we've got an app running with Node. It actually be running with anything, but it's Node.
Yep.
We write apps, and let's be honest, not every set of code is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's hidden bugs, things that happen later that you... As much unit testing and other kinds of testing you can do, you're not going to catch it all.
Right.
The best CI process. You go live, something goes down. We want something as an enterprise, a CXO level, to say... Okay, it went down. I want to identify it immediately.
Right.
I want to alert the right people mm-hmm. immediately and then hopefully have an automated way to fix it.
Right.
But the first step is always detecting the problem.
Yep.
How do you do that with Node? And how do you guys help with that?
Well, some of the approaches that we enable out of the box is you can run a CPU profile and automatically get a flame graph with NodeSource and Solid. So, you know, you're running your application. There's you know, your code. It's, you know, not working as you expect. Where is the issue?
Right. You know, I just know it isn't working.
Right. You know. Oh, you know, where do I go? You would have to, in, you know, kind of the normal case, take it out of production, go and instrument the code, put it into a staging environment, and
in the meantime, I'm losing millions of dollars.
Hope and pray that you're going to figure out where the issue is.
Right.
With NSolid, that's, you know, out of the box enabled.
NSolid's your product.
Yes.
Okay, just make
it lightweight,
sure.
And you're able to identify the issue. But you know, maybe you're an operations team member. You didn't write that code. You don't know where that issue. You know, you could see that there's an issue there, but you don't know what to do with that. You hand that off to your dev team. They can go and go back to that page and see the same flame graph and have the deep insight of where it is in the code. Get that fixed, put it into production, and
So like exceptions, memory leaks, things like this, it can help identify
right. And
locate quickly.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome.
Right.
So how do you, this, help me connect some dots here. We've got some folks from Microsoft, some folks from NodeSource. What are you doing here at Build this week?
Right. So
you're here for a reason, right?
We are here. We're here to sell, NodeSource. Absolutely. But the reason why we're here at Build is to support our relationship with Microsoft, who's been doing a fantastic job at not only supporting Node, but Azure is a great platform for running Node.
Yes.
And here at Microsoft Build, we announced the availability in the Azure Marketplace of NodeSource and Solid. With a one-click deployment, you can have your NSolid cluster up and running, and you're off to the races.
And can you point that at multiple app services and functions? How about Azure Functions support that as well?
We don't support Azure Functions yet. Hopefully,
but app services are there.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Gotcha. Cool. Full disclosure, I am the Node guy for running apps in Azure from the advocate side, so it's totally interesting to me to be able to not only diagnose things with app insights, but also to be able to dive deep into what's actually happening beyond the code I wrote.
Right.
So we can take this to the marketplace, attach it to our apps, get this information for multiple environments and slots.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And
where do you learn more about this, by the way, so we make sure we don't miss?
So absolutely, there's a portal at azure.com/node. You can find all the information. You can go directly to the NSolid on the Azure Marketplace from there, and you'll find also the resources that our team's been working on. How do you operationalize this? How do we make it easy and understandable to take that into practice and have easy to follow steps to go and put this into production?
If we could kind of step up for a minute, too, I think it'd be good to help understand and set the table. This is really interesting of what we're talking about, but people are using Node in a lot of weird places these days, places we wouldn't have expected years ago, right? And I know from personal experience, trying to get Node to work in the enterprise, there was resistance originally
right. When
I've gone down this road. But I find it really interesting to see, how are you all working together? Did you guys approach them or vice versa? What's the relationship?
Right. No, that's a great question. And, kind of stepping up and taking a broader look. I look at Node as a three-pronged pillar or three-pronged story for us. The first and the foremost thing is being there in the ecosystem, being there in the community, being there in the foundation. So as Microsoft, one of the things we are doing is we are pretty heavily engaged on all of those fronts. One of the things, we are part of the Node Foundation. I'm, in fact, a director there representing Microsoft. We are working in the code base now. We have more people, more developers kind of going, looking at the Node.
So we're making PRs.
Yeah, into the Node
right in the
core.
Code base.
One of the things we've been to a couple of places where we've been most interacting with the people are around diagnostics. And the other place is the NAPI project, which is essentially trying to bring abstraction to Node. So being in the ecosystem is the first pillar. The second big pillar for us is when we think about Microsoft and all of the capabilities and products we have, the first thing comes is developers, right? So we have some great products in Visual Studio Code, VS, VS for Mac. And one of the things we're working through is to think through the end-to-end holistic journey for a developer as he comes. So we have a great solution in VS Code. You have TypeScript as a great language for enterprise developers, who are digging into JavaScript, want to create stuff with scale. To the other end, that we go to, with CI/CD, we of course, in between there's Azure, but that's my third pillar that I'll come to. So you have this end-to-end tooling that we want to bring up. The third pillar is really Azure. We have a great cloud. People always have this incorrect notion that, hey, if I'm thinking about OSS technologies, if I'm thinking about something like Node, should I think about Azure? Absolutely, yes, because Node, Azure has great support for Node.js and some of the associated technologies. And you know, Jonathan has in fact been working on a lot of those, and he can kind of give you a nutshell. So when we look at these three pillars, you know, one of the thing is working with people in companies and partner teams which are closely entrenched in this space. You know, for us, NodeSource was, of course, one of the you know, obvious players who is in this place. You know, so are some of the others. Like, there's Nearform, there's Rising Stack. You know, whom
we like
are
New
working
Relic
with
as well, which does some similar.
Yeah,
stuff.
So they do a little bit of the you know, APM stuff, just like we have App Insights. But you know, it was a great relationship building. You know, as we started working on this, NodeSource was in fact, like, you know, we've been collaborating for a very long time. You know, back from the days where we, you know, brought in some of the other technologies to Node, and we started working on how we get Microsoft more involved in Node. Mm-hmm. So our relationship actually goes all the way back when they, you know, started forming Node.
Some people are going to have a real problem with this. You know why? A lot of people got into Node and JavaScript because it was like the cool alternative thing to do, right?
Right, right.
If you're going to make it mainstream and make it easy to work with the enterprise, that's going to have a real impact on people doing the cool thing, right?
I've gotten that feedback over the years.
Yes.
And the reality is, it is enabling developer happiness and developer joy. You know, so the experience that we had at PayPal. So I helped bring in Node.js and really take the Java stack that they had there and bring that all over to Node.js. One of the greatest takeaways from that experience is the level of developer satisfaction that they were able to get in their internal surveys, the teams that were working on their Java stack versus the teams that were working on the Node.js stack. The developer satisfaction was way higher in the Node.js.
Why do you think that is?
I think it comes from shipping code.
Right.
The shipping code is where developers get their...
So you
their
think they think shipping code is faster and more
shipping
efficient?
Code wins. You, when you're a developer, when you see your code live in production, you get that endorphin rush. That's mine. I accomplished something. So the more that we can enable the shipping of code, the agility, that time to market, my experience with Java Stack is, you know, you're looking typically at 6 to 24 months end-to-end in the development of a project. With Node, we're seeing that, you know, more along the lines of 2 to 8 months. And, you know, with things like Azure Functions and Functions as a Service, you know, we're seeing that accelerating even further. So microservices are becoming function services, and you know, we're getting to a really exciting moment in development where we can get, you know, live in production in the arc of a day and have the, you know, developer satisfaction that we've accomplished something, that we're delivering user value.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head, because a lot of people, I call this the biggest lie we tell ourselves in technology, is developers feel like sometimes we say, and I've said this myself, I'll use that technology because it's faster, better than technology X or Y. Right. And I don't think that's true. I think we're lying to ourselves when we say that, because Node, Java, ASP.NET, whatever, we pick the technology we pick because we enjoy using it.
Yeah.
If people who write with Node like writing with Node, and people write with Java like writing with Java, it may be the thing they've used for years, and they just want to stick with it. But that's why people stick or go or gravitate towards a technology, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Most of us, at least, go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, if you can make not only the development experience faster, right? Everyone can write Hello World in anything.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
That works great.
Yep.
You don't need NodeSource to write Hello World. At least I hope you don't, right? But once you do that and you want to go to production, you've got to debug your apps. You've got to be able to diagnose them. And that all goes in with making your CXO level happy and making sure you can feel confident that, hey, if something breaks and someone's going, oh my gosh, something broke, you've got to go fix it. You've got to feel confident that you know how to solve that problem.
Right.
And I think that's where .NET and Java have been for years, that maturity level you talked about.
Yep.
And I think Node's coming there.
Yeah.
So Jonathan, you work a lot with these kind of different technologies. What's been your experience working with Node as far as getting it out to different kind of scenarios?
You know, I would echo really what Dan said, that, you know, the excitement that we've seen working with many Node developers, similarly to front-end web developers or kind of the JavaScript ecosystem as a whole, is just the excitement around the agility, the productivity that you gain, the vast, prolific ecosystem that exists, which helps with the morale and happiness boost and the feeling of how much you can achieve and collaborate with people. And so really, you know, from our perspective with Azure, between that, VS Code, you know, trying to help make sure we can contribute to, as you take that productive environment into production, how can you continue to achieve those gains of productivity as well as having the operational capabilities you have, whether it's diagnostics, if something goes wrong in production, or being able to ship at a cadence that's as fast as your team is capable of sustaining, and across all various types of compute models that work for you. Mm-hmm. So whether you want to just do a Git deployment of a Node.js app to a simple cloud service, we want to make sure that that's simple and easy. If you want to go use Docker containers, which of course we're seeing everybody is moving to for great reason, portability, lots of great value there, we want to make sure we embrace that too, because there's elements of developer happiness that comes along with that product, or functions, or once you've adopted containers and you now want to scale into a microservice architecture, what can we provide there to make sure that you're using Kubernetes or DCOS or Docker Swarm and you can continue to feel empowered and happy with that setup? Mm-hmm. And so really, you know, what we've been seeing is the response that people have to, you know, our contributions to make sure that we meet node developers where they're at, bringing Azure to the forefront of their workflow, embracing OSS everywhere we possibly can while adding the value and the operational infrastructure that Azure specializes in. And really, you know, Azure plus OSS has been a great marriage and experience for developers. And so I've been very excited to see it, you know, plus VS Code getting layered in there to provide a great local developer environment, be productive pre-deployment, post-deployment. It's been really exciting.
I think you hit the nail on the head, I think, with where people are going with it. I think the excitement people have with Node is Azure seems to be meeting the Node developers where they are,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? And through these tools that you guys are putting in as well. Yeah. It's not like, hey, you're doing everything great. Yeah. We love you. Now change everything about you.
Yep. Right.
And you can use this tool, right? So going to where they are, acting the way they are, and using the tools and the ecosystem they are. One thing I think I find a lot with Node, and I'd like to get your guys' opinion on how it works, is when people start using Node, I think there's this misconception that especially more with JavaScript than Node, I think, that JavaScript is the Wild West and it's so hard to code in and blah, blah, blah. And it's not like C# or Java where there's never a problem, right?
Right.
You can't write a bad line of code in C# or Java.
Right. It's JavaScript, it can't go wrong.
The way I like to explain it too is, okay, so imagine going over the Golden State Bridge, right? Golden Gate Bridge. And you're going over there and there's guardrails up on the side. If you decide you want to start bouncing off the guardrails, it'll keep you on the road. You'll be a bad driver.
Right.
That's C# or Java. They've got things in place to stop you, but you're still going to get on the other side. JavaScript is the same bridge without the guardrails.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're still going to get to the other side, but if you choose, you can go off and swim in the bay.
Yep.
Right?
Yep, totally.
Yep.
But the same thing is both. You could have bad drivers in both languages. Mm-hmm. So we all write bad code eventually. We look at the code wrote yesterday and things are bad.
Right.
But in this Node ecosystem, when you've got a language like JavaScript, which I happen to love the freedom mm-hmm. that it gives you, and I think we all do because we write this stuff, how do you, as a corporate environment, make sure that you've got the things in place to make sure that when there is that bad driver, you can find it?
Right.
What are you all finding? Joe?
Sure. Well, you know, we have a lot of great development experience across many languages, and best practices are often best practices for a reason, and they often translate across those languages. So, you know, like any good programming environment, unit tests still get you part of the way. To even help a little bit further, Microsoft has TypeScript, which we're seeing a lot of adoption inside the enterprise, which kind of tries to bring those guardrails back a little bit for JavaScript. You know, Visual Code has great tooling around TypeScript. A lot of it's built in and kind of on by default, and you may not even know it. But really, you know, following a lot of the best guidelines, you know, still got to test. You know, that doesn't go away no matter what you do.
And DevOps built in with DevOps. That, right?
Right, exactly. And in addition, you know, especially as we start to move towards the cloud, it's no longer you're running one instance of your application. So you have to already be prepared for if that one instance goes down, it should be one of 10, one of 20. And, you know, use those same DevOps best practices for how did you manage your apps in the past? You have a restart policy. You have guidelines to say, hey, be aware of when things have stopped to make sure that we're restarting them. You know, one of the great things with containers nowadays is we have all these great orchestration systems. We can use Kubernetes to say, hey, make sure that there are 12 instances of my app running all the time. If one dies, Kubernetes has the functionality to go and restart that. Make sure that we're meeting that service level that
we're requesting. Divert to the others, restart the one,
yep.
Then pull it back in the pool.
Exactly.
That's great. And let's say we're building an app. We talked about things you guys can detect, too. Common problem I see in Node code is somebody will do a JSON parse.
Yep.
And you can't say that's a bad practice because maybe the thing it's parsing is really tiny, right? It's like 8 lines of code. Who cares? But maybe that thing is also 15 meg file.
Right.
So, for example, if that happens, it's blocking the event loop.
Right. Yep.
Nothing else can happen. Then all of a sudden, your vice president comes down and goes, hey, you're fired. Node sucks.
Yep.
How do we can't detect all that kind of stuff with linters. We can see it's a parse, but we don't know what it's parsing.
Right.
How do we define these things, like in a live production site? You mentioned Kubernetes. That could be something that causes that app not to crash, maybe, but to be like non-responsive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what can we do to kind of combat some of that stuff?
Well, you know, the great thing with our modern systems and running inside of containers in Kubernetes is our systems are ephemeral now. We're scaling up, we're scaling down dynamically.
You know, everybody's looking up that word right now. Sorry, go ahead.
So, these instances of our app, one of the beautiful things about Node is it takes moments to be live.
Yeah.
So if you're used to, the old school monolithic deployment where, hey, we got to, warm this thing up for 5 minutes before, we can put it into the load balancer, that's not Node. Node is, in milliseconds live, and you're off to the races. So you can dynamically scale up and scale down based on the needs of the system. So if you have 15 megs that come up every once in a while, then that's easy in a Kubernetes deployment to scale around and deal with that.
You can set your strategy with Azure to say, hey, right. Scale up when these things happen.
Yep.
And then when it relieves itself, automatically compress back down.
With nSolid, you can set threshold criteria. So if your application goes out into a very high CPU usage or very high memory usage, you can automatically trigger a flame graph and get a snapshot of the state of your application at that time and dive in. One of the interesting things that you can do to mitigate that JSON parse, if you're frequently getting a large object that you need to handle is using the Node.js capability of streams. So you turn that into a streaming parser. So you mentioned that we're blocking the event loop. So we have one function that is occupying all the time of our event loop. And so you have to wait until that function's done, and then we go on to the next element in the event loop. When you break that down into streams, you break that down into very granular chunks that you can say, all right, I've gotten some of the data. We're going to deal with it. We're going to parse it. Block the loop, and you're able to deal with that in a different architectural way.
So you mentioned something I really want to ask one good question about, because the flame graph.
Yeah.
One of the problems we have in production a lot is we don't know what the problem is till we know what the problem is.
Right.
So when something goes down, usually what happens, in my experience, is they don't say, hey, Jonathan, go fix it. Tell me what's wrong. I'll make sure all the customers understand you're looking at it while they can't function. What they're really doing is saying, restart the server, right? And then they go tell you, hey, it's broken. Mm-hmm. Will you tell me why? And at that point, you've lost data.
Lost all your context.
Right.
So can we configure with nSolid to figure out how we get the flame graph anytime there's a crash or things like that? How do we use that to help diagnose those issues?
We can go in and have the threshold settings you're out of memory and CPU situation.
Right, so it's usually one of those two things.
Right,
yeah.
The area where your system's completely died. We won't capture that.
Right, because it's died.
It's gone.
Right. Yeah. But usually,
it's ephemerized. It's gone.
Usually, with Node, it's more like it's hanging. because it's doing something with memory or CPU or something else.
And those are the moments that you know we can capture them. And
that's like having your own personal Jonathan sitting there.
That's right.
Waiting for
clicking
the thing
the
to die.
Yeah. And calling you.
Which I'm happy to
that's
do.
Really what's happening. Jonathan's sitting inside of Ensolve.
That's right.
Yep. Got it. This is awesome.
That's why our relationship is so good.
That's right.
We feed him.
Yeah. As we wrap up, I think the main theme I'm seeing here is that Node is not just it's not a second-class citizen with Azure.
No.
Right? I mean, it's really become a major player in the Azure world.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Running on
totally.
Linux, running on Azure. This is what all the cloud providers are doing these days, running lots of Node.
Yep.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, guys, thanks for coming on. I'm going to go check it out myself.
Great. Yeah.
So it's azure.com/node.
And if you want to learn more about NodeSource, nodesource.com.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.